Welcome to an all-new episode of the McFuture Podcast. This is Steve Factor, and today is the big one. This is the episode that will spark all sorts of controversy. There will be blood on the streets. There will be hashtags all up in your frushnizzle. By now, you've probably seen lots and lots of articles and signs and books about inequality. The only thing I could hope for is that they were recycled properly. A few, like Thomas Piketty's Capital, they're pretty good at explaining the problem. But I got to be honest, 696 pages without a single laugh? Some things are more unforgivable than inequality. Now you're unequal and you're sad. Plus, his solution felt a little bit anticlimactic. Global wealth tax. Oh, wait a minute. Spoiler alert. Global wealth tax. Great. I'm going to add that to my to-do list right after taming Mars and wooing Giselle. Giselle Bundchen? I don't even think I could spell it. How could I be with a woman whose name I can't spell? Anyway, in case you weren't one of the millions and millions who slept outside of an Amazon warehouse to get my first book, I anticipated the 99% movement. I made this lavish case for why businesses should fix this hollowed out middle class that was happening. I'll give you the caveman summary of it. Money go, customers go. It's really that simple. And still, not one thank you, Bobka, from Bernie Sanders. Today, what I'd like to do is prove that income inequality is absolutely the wrong way of framing the problem. Look, inequality could be explained and solved with just one word. Ivanka. No, that's not the word. It's expectations. And there are three pretty solvable things that are standing between us and this American dream that we all grew up with and thought was attainable. Now, before I explain how and why, let me ask you a favor. Put down the knife. I know what happened to the last person who yelled, "Hey, get off my lawn and pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you dirty hippie." That's not me. That's not what I'm saying. And I think that's the problem with this whole conversation so far. On one extreme, you've got all these people that barely admit there's a problem. And then the other, it's like a kleptomaniac at a flea market. But neither side is really close to the answer. So let's start with something basic. Is there a problem? Believe it or not, it's not as straightforward as you'd think. There was a study by USA Today that shows to achieve the American dream, a family of four has to earn about $130,000 a year. Now, the problem with that is that the average income in reality is $53,000 a year. Now, in all fairness, your kids are probably slacking off. I got two words to get their asses into gear. Serena Williams. Now, chop, chop, kids, get on the tennis court. Those kids got to earn their keep. Studies show that a lot of young Americans, they've pretty much given up on being rich. And it's really no wonder why, because most adults have no retirement savings. And 46% of people, they did the survey, it's insane. 46% of people can't scrape together $400 in an emergency. And the middle class today is poorer than it was in 1989. That's the year that NSYNC watched New Kids on the Block and decided, wow, this is amazing. Someday that'll be me. It's not all bad news. NSYNC has since disbanded, which might explain why Americans are still happy despite their inequality. Many people would rather make $50,000 today than $100,000 in the 80s because of all the cheap, amazing technology we can use for porn, really. I mean, what do we use all this amazing technology for? And our middle class is still way richer than almost anyone else's. In your face, Paraguay. What's not really clear is if this idea of equality was ever real or sustainable in the first place. Maybe all that stuff we saw during the industrial era was a complete and total fluke. All those people without college degrees supporting families on one income? Ha, yeah, right. What next? KFC chickens reassembling themselves like Voltron? The history of mankind is this big, grimy, back-breaking serfdom. And maybe we're just Ubering our way back to the norm. The problem is, we've had a taste of the good life. I like to think of it as a lion that was raised in captivity and then one day gets to bite into live flesh for the first time, probably as trainers. Once you get that taste for blood, it wakes up all of these primal instincts. You don't just go back to that crappy bag of Purina lion kibble. Now you got to eat the assistant. We expect more, but can we have it? Now, the real issue with inequality is we're comparing wages to all the wrong things. We're comparing it to the past or to CEO pay or to other countries. The OECD, and I'd love to tell you what that stands for, but you can look it up. They basically found that inequality does not correlate to happiness. So my theory is income has to meet or exceed expectations. The first part of it is new innovations. When this country IPO'd in 1776, our list of expectations read like a homeless shelter with 2 stars on Yelp. Food, no rain in the living room, and maybe an occasional moose pelt. Yeah, eventually we got some good stuff like printing press and steam engine and locomotives, but most of those weren't going into your house, much less your pocket. Hey, is that an Orient Express in your pocket? Or, all right, you get the joke. It wasn't until the Industrial Revolution when we got really good stuff. We were able to drive Model Ts, watch I Love Lucy, and scorch our tongues with Hot Pockets. Along the way, we got indoor plumbing, electricity, refrigerator, radio, TV, telephone, even microwaves and VCRs that for some reason still blink 12 o'clock at my parents' house. And today, we could barely keep ourselves from smothering the flight attendant when Delta's Wi-Fi goes off for like 2 seconds. How things have changed. Think about it. The inconceivable has become indispensable. And it's not going to be long before we say the same exact thing about teleportation and sex drones and pocket meat replicators. By the way, just don't put the meat in the sex drone. Trust me, the cleanup. Making and selling this growing list of conveniences, it created tons and tons of jobs. Income started to rise along with it. So that let us afford, demand, and then expect more and more stuff, more and more conveniences. We even want these big ticket government services like Social Security, Medicare, healthcare, college degrees. Whether you're liberal or conservative, it doesn't matter. You still want those things. You might disagree on how to pay for them, but you want them. The most devious thing about this process is how quickly useful innovations become necessities. Every so often, a few hundred million people just happen to wake up expecting to own some gadget they knew existed like 5 minutes ago. And over time, the expectations start to pile up and it creates this layer cake effect. Now, lucky for us, as these shiny, expensive new things come along, the old ones flatten out. They get cheaper and cheaper, or they improve. So you think about something like food. The price of food has been dropping like crazy over the years. You could barely leave the house without someone shoving chips in your face. When I was working in Radio Shack during college, by the way, totally feeling like a one percenter, I used to sell these lunchbox-sized cancer bricks that passed for cell phones. And who bought them? Rich white guys. Today, every fetus gets handed a smartphone in utero for a couple of bucks a month. And it's not just new expectations. We want more from existing ones. A perfect example is healthcare. Everybody wants it, but they don't want the black and white version from the 50s. Or the hacksaw brain surgeries from the 1800s. We want virtual reality assisted organ transplants and 3D prosthetics and boner pills and MRIs and dietitians and, I don't know, fertility treatments and sex lasers. Yeah, there's such a thing as sex lasers. Who knew you could even binge on stuff we hate using? But affording minimum expectations isn't enough. We also need fun. People aren't robots. At least not yet. We crave freedom, but freedom is anything but free. It takes discretionary funds. And depending on the person, that could mean a vacation in France, an Xbox game, or a totally essential leech treatment. I'm looking at you, Demi Moore. I've seen you at the salon. Wealth can buy lots of freedom above and beyond basic expectations. The last thing we need is security or savings. Unless you're planning to die right after you retire, you're going to need another 20, maybe 30 years of savings, maybe less in countries where Social Security includes nannies and foie gras. But you take these three things together, new innovations, fun, and security. Those are the three things that make up our expectations. Those are the things we should be comparing to income. So our optimal income is something that provides for all three things. As long as that formula stays in balance, most people are going to be content. We'll eat our burgers, watch our football, vote for Hillary. Everything will just be peachy for Christmas or Festivus. This has stayed true for most of the 20th century. Old expectations almost always got cheaper as new expensive ones came along. They kept pace with the income. Then something strange happened. In the late 70s, American income started to stagnate, and our savings rate dropped from 16% to under 3% in the mid-2000s. America went on this huge shopping spree. And the reason for that isn't as obvious as you think, and it's also the key to fixing inequality. A lot of people blame the credit bubble for our binge, but all the recession did was it highlighted something we can't deny. The reason we're overspending is that expectations started piling up faster than ever. All these new inventions reach more people in less time than ever before. And we want them all, layer after layer after layer. The good news is our lives are getting better, faster, but we're stacking up expectations faster than a coked up Lamar Odom playing Jenga. Lucky for us, a lot of these new luxuries are affordable, but only because they're made with little labor or by little laborers. There's more to want, but fewer good jobs to buy it. And then when you think about self-driving cars and trucks, that's going to kill car ownership, and it's going to make transportation so much cheaper that it's going to be reflected in the price of everything. It's all going to get cheaper. But you know what? That's also going to snuff out entire job categories. It's so Romeo and Juliet. Even what we've witnessed with Occupy Bernie Sanders isn't about people suddenly falling in love with socialism or hating the rich or being turned on by grandpas who look like Larry David. Same with Trump. They're just byproducts of our expectations outpacing our ability to attain them. People are pedaling faster and faster, but never getting ahead. This creates a scarcity mindset, and we start to doubt everything from corporations to government to foreigners, and eventually the American dream itself. There is a dirty little secret here. Even flat or even declining incomes can be optimal incomes as long as necessities get cheaper about as fast as new ones arrive. There are three specific expectations that are keeping our layer cake from compressing and breaking our formula to pieces: healthcare, education, and housing. And all three of them happen to be blessed with tons of government intervention. And these price distortions that are created by that are keeping the costs from compressing. I'll give you an example. If the government backed unlimited loans for computers, let's say in the 90s, the way it did for education and healthcare, guess what? We'd be talking about laptop inequality today. Dell, Lenovo, and Apple, they'd be soaking consumers the exact same way colleges do today. Actually, Apple does soak consumers, but for a different reason. We'd be taking out $30,000 mortgages to buy an iPad the size of a Buick. Not only are these three overpriced categories driving inequality, but they're stealing from us. What they're doing is they're gorging on money we'd otherwise save or maybe spend on other necessities. So they're robbing every other business in America because they're hogging a bloated share of the economy. There is a light at the end of this tunnel, though. Since 2008, the price of housing more or less normalized, and it's even dropped in comparison to some other prices. Just don't tell that to anyone apartment hunting in New York unless you're prepared to get violently hashtagged right in your Twitter. There's even better news. There's a lot of smart entrepreneurs that are innovating ways to plunge the cost of all three of these demons. We will get to optimal income, but the journey won't always be pretty. That's it for today. Don't forget to subscribe to the McFuture podcast. Tell a friend, tell your enemies. And don't forget to rate us 5 stars on iTunes or any other podcast program that you use. There's also in the show notes links to articles I've written that give you a little bit more depth on some of these subjects. I will be covering a lot more with my own monologues, but also with innovators and thinkers and cultural icons coming up. You're going to love it. I'm Steve Factor. See you next week on The McFuture.